You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 10, Episode 19, Bonus Episode 3, I think, titled One More. In fact, there are a lot more bonus episodes. This is not just one more. Aaron, this is the Gabriel and Aaron episode. What did you think of this?
I liked it. I thought that I was hoping that this was going to go to a more clever, thing at the end. I thought that it was pretty clever. And importantly, I've always liked Aaron and the actor that portrays him, but like he's never had like much signature standout kind of work in my mind anyway. And I think, if we're going to, build a show around who we got left for 24 more episodes, you need to flesh out some of these people more. And it was a good episode for that. It's a good episode. And also to kind of mark like how different Gabriel is post Whispers.
Yeah, no shit.
But they also like really went for broke in some of the cinematography. Like, I don't know how much of it worked, but I appreciate, the blood spatter on the leaves and flowers.
On
and
the grasshoppers, man. That was
the poor grass. Where's PETA on this? Can you spray? You spray a locust with walker blood? And get the seal of approval from PETA and the humanitarian organization, the Humane Society. And there's a couple of nice shots of like, the Walking Dead does this, like the desolate fields and like the sense of loneliness, like they begin and end the episodes with that. Decent variety of sets and things. I thought I like seeing that. It's not just two dudes walking through fucking random Georgia woods. Ultimately, it just. I think it's one of the better standalone episodes thus far, but it still wasn't quite as good as I was hoping it would be when I saw what the setup was going to be. What do you think?
I was pretty bored through the first 15 minutes or so of this, where it is mostly just them walking through the woods. Gabriel saying, like, doing his countdown, 10 to just 112 more, Aaron, just 112 more. Until they get to the warehouse, and then the warehouse stuff was pretty good. I was super surprised and happy to see Robert Patrick. I don't see him in a lot of stuff these days. And I was like, is that who I think it is? Because he's looking a lot older than the last time I saw him. And he's all, made up with this big scar on his face and a beard. Maybe I can't remember, but he's looking a lot different. And I don't know. I like that guy. We just did our badass rankings. He's a pretty big badass, I'd say, in cinema history. So that was cool to see.
Oh, for sure.
And I guess I also, I really like the stuff they did with Gabriel in particular, because we've seen him like slowly descending into this character who's turned a corner on humanity and not in a good way. And this really like puts the stamp on it. This says, this is kind of the line here that we've drawn where Gabriel is no longer. I don't even know. I don't want to call him like not a good person, but he has lost all faith in everything, right? In his God, in humanity, in ever getting back to some sense of normal. It's all gone. And so I really enjoyed that transformation. I think you're right. Aaron had a lot of good stuff too. But I was looking at this episode through the lens of Gabriel, and it was good. I liked most of it.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And I kind of was excited with, again, because this episode kind of triple subverted my expectations because I'm like, oh, Deer Hunter. Okay. And then, oh, we're going to do something slight. But I, at some point I thought like, oh my God, is Robert, or Pat, what is it? Robert Patrick. What is his name? Yeah. Robert Patrick is going to join the main cast of The Walking Dead for the final season.
I wondered
That's
too.
That's kind of fucking hot.
Right.
This grizzled old dude, did they got to integrate like that? I could see that like destabilizing the thing in an interesting way. And then it didn't happen. I was kind of bummed.
Yeah.
But it's just taking on its own. Like, this is an average episode of The Walking Dead, I think, all said and done. And I'm still waiting to hear like them knock. I'm still waiting to see them knock one of these out of the park. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, as like, that's the thing. It's like, I'm kind of interested in seeing after these six are over, what are kind of overall, like, should they have done this? Would they needed to do this? Like, it's been a long time since Walking Dead was on. They needed to inject some excitement.
And they didn't have that season finale ready to go, right? Like, they made these between like episode 15 and episode 16.
Yeah.
Between airing those, and then they air the finale and then these right after it, like months after they had aired 15. So yeah, it's really weird. The pandemic just fucked this all up. I don't know if these need to be made, but I'm really curious to see the Negan one, because that's the one that people talk about.
The Negan ones, everyone says, like, but like, I remember like when we were covering season 10 and like these started to come out contemporaneously and people are like, these are pretty good. I would say that like these have been disappointing to average thus far, but we'll see.
And it's as with like Walking Dead.
I mean, right. And I guess like the other thing is like, if you grade on a curve, if you haven't seen The Walking Dead in a year and like you're happy that it's back and like, you know, there's it's taking the story further than I thought it would. But also I'm starting to see what they mean by these are bonus episodes. They're not, you know, these are things almost exclusively explaining things about characters. But it's not really moving the plot forward, you know. Because I'm kind of shocked that we haven't seen any of the new white stormtroopers.
Oh, we will.
That they,
I think next episode is going back to Ezekiel's group. Yeah.
Because I thought that maybe this was all going to be just kind of like literally, you know, we're not going to introduce any new threats. We're not going to take the ball forward. It's just going to all be like, you know, going on random survival depot missions and stuff like that. So, or flashbacks, things like of that nature.
It might be. I don't know. Maybe they like have them in a train car and it's just them in a train car for an hour pondering their situation. Wouldn't surprise me, but
are we A's or B's? We got to know. How do we know if we're stuck in the car? It's totally, you got a whole different game plan if you're an A than you are if you're a B.
And you sit around and wait if you're an A. If you're a B,
guess that's true.
Got to find the nearest river and jump in. All right. What do you think about getting to the recap?
I think we should do that.
Hear the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
So we start off with blood on a dandelion, blood everywhere, blood on, like we said, grasshoppers. There's something insulting about the blood on the grasshopper. Like, I'm not even a grasshopper, and if I were, I would be doubly insulted. But I don't know why I get such a visceral, like, sense of shame on you guys for spraying blood on this grasshopper.
I think it's because the grasshopper gives it a bit of a performance where it's like, ah, fuck, what is that? Its legs are going right up. Like, I wasn't expecting, do not enjoy this. It didn't, yeah, it didn't just sit there. It's clearly alive.
Flower, and the whole thing is moving back and forth. It's
incensed. Yeah, it's going through an experience. It doesn't want this. It didn't ask for this.
It's something unnatural. I don't know. I didn't like it. But Gabriel and Aaron are surrounded by walkers. They kill them all. They see that there's the house that they were trying to raid for supplies, I guess, has been burned to the ground. And Aaron sees these burned bodies, asks what happened. And Gabriel says, we'll never know, even though Gabriel's done this exact thing. I think Gabriel knows. I think Gabriel knows about burning people alive inside of structures.
Well, clearly there was a preacher here and he couldn't deal with his flock. You know,
that's what I assume the backstory is.
So he just, yeah, it was reverse Gabriel. He burnt himself up and then the family got caught into the cross burn.
Is it just too soon? Does he not want to like talk about this?
I want to go back and clown on the last episode a little bit, because like Daryl's girlfriend struggling with a single zombie roommate is thrown in sharp relief to with the sheer amount of zombies still left alive in the world. Even the ones that are kind of like, you know, having a hard time getting started in the morning. There's just mini herds everywhere. Yeah, Leah was not long for the world, it doesn't seem like.
Probably not. So they kill that walker that you were talking about having a hard time getting off this post.
Then they
use an egg timer to draw the others out of the field, which I thought was really cool. You know, it's one of those things where like you don't need a power source for this. You just twist the thing and it works on mechanics alone.
Yeah, it's a great little one weird trick to kill a shit ton of zombies. And I like the old tired zombies. Like we haven't seen those for in a while where they're just kind of like laying down and they're like they're done. Give up. They're like you can walk right up to them. Nothing. You hit them with a rock, though, and that peels off their whole back because it's stuck to the pretty gnarly.
Yeah,
pretty gnarly.
It's gross. When it first started, I was like, are these walkers getting weaker? But then, you know, you got a whole field of them that get up right away. I don't think the Walking Dead is ever going to do that. No. They're just perpetually going to roam the earth looking for brains to eat.
Especially when you think about Bicycle Girl with Rick. And then you compare that, like,
yeah,
what have these zombies gone through that they can still like move to the extent that they can even get up? And like also like tall grass in the zombie apocalypse is terrifying. You got to chuck these sonic grenades every like 30, 40 feet, right?
It's like the minefield that they were walking across with Princess, right? Can't see the threat that lurks. You know, I imagine you couldn't see it even a few feet ahead of you.
No, not that kind of grass. Although I wonder if you could smell it. Because the thing is, like, I don't feel like we talk about this enough. Just how horrible the zombie apocalypse smells. So, like, when Gabriel comes, like, at the end of the episode, he goes into that attic and he's, like, making a wrinkly face. Like, that must be some fucking stench.
Yeah.
if these guys who clear out zombies for a living, degloving zombies left, right, and center, are like, oh my God, something died up here. It must be bad. It must be hell. Yeah. Robert Patrick, what kind of squalor are you living in? Filth and decay. My God.
That's not good. Do you think like dead and decaying human bodies smell worse than active walker bodies?
I don't know, because like I guess there's a point you can make that the zombies retard the decay process. That must be
to some degree. So like, they have to, yeah.
Yeah, so they must not stink. Because like a lot of this human, like you compare like the horse and the rider in this next scene, it's fully skeletonized to like your average zombie. Yeah, I guess you might be right that a decaying human might stink worse because they're more decay, they're decaying faster, more putrefaction.
Could be.
It's not a race I'd want to try to get, you know, it's not a contest I'd try to win, no. You know, if I'm shambling around a zombie, he's like, well, at least I don't stink as bad as a fucking bloated human. Goddamn. Maggoty ass.
I do think about that all the time. I don't bring it up on the podcast always, but last episode when Daryl and Leah were standing in that tree, like Carl and Enid, I was like, God, that must stink. Like rubbing right up to Daryl, and he's been in the woods. He's not taking a bath for years.
Hasn't touched soap for years, and also surrounded by the dead. Yeah.
Terrible. So they search some cars, but they don't find anything other than, you know, walkers and carnage.
I like that one where they get to the last trunk and it's clearly full of groceries, and Gabriel's like excited because, you know, he's been bullying Aaron to do one more, stretching this out. Mm-hmm. And there's a bullet hole through the groceries. Like, fuck.
Yeah.
It is kind of grim, though, because suddenly our survivors are no longer thriving. They don't have those soft breads and jams. They're like fucking starving again.
This is what I was thinking. I'm glad that they took that into account. You know, we've lost the hilltop. We lost a ton of crops. We lost a good chunk of Alexandria.
Sure.
Yeah, food is scarce.
And what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Because like these guys have walked experienced searchers with handpicked maps of depots and stuff. And they're empty handed at the end of a 2-week roundup.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty bad. And I wonder how, like, if we're going to set off a migration. What if we leave Alexandria at the very beginning of the season? Because they're telling a pretty grim tale that like we might have to just leave, or because there's not even things to hunt left.
No. Yeah, that makes a certain amount of sense. Like, you think about how hard of a time they had finding food years ago before they got to like the prison, or specifically Alexandria.
Right.
You know, they were eating dog food, right? Or you know, being scolded for
almost
trying to eat
resorting
dog food.
To, yeah.
Now we're years on, right? There's been only more scavenging by other groups, taking more supplies.
And shit expires.
You know,
canned food is not good for infinity. No.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. But like the food has to be even more scarce now. And they have even more people, right? They've been having kids. They've been bringing in stragglers. Sure. Their community is big. Yeah. How are they going to provide for everybody? I don't know. This is just a taste of that. And I think we'll get more into it next season.
100%.
So then Aaron uses his mace arm to bash at the entrance of a building with walkers inside. They pull the arm skin right off of one that's blocking the entrance.
Yeah, that was fucking degloving is the worst, man.
Yeah.
And a zombie full arm deglove is pretty grim shit.
Which is worse, the degloving or the face skin with the mask, like peeling off.
I thought the arms were going to come out at the socket, like, you know, twisting a turkey leg after it's been baking for 4 or 5 hours. It just comes right. I thought that the meat was going to come off right at the shoulder bone.
I was thinking when I saw that zombie, boy, that's a chunky zombie. That is a big boy
zombie. He was a big boy. He was a big
normally, boy. Normally, the Walking Dead will like hire people who are very slight of build, right? In order to pack makeup onto them so they can do things like this. This time it seems like they hired a normal dude and said, pack the skin on.
They wanted a good old bloater from The Last of Us to show up. So it's nice. Yeah. Nice to see the chunky zombies every once in a while.
Gabriel climbs inside the building, cuts his way to the entrance. They don't find anything. And Gabriel wants to do one more.
I actually liked him constantly finding these fucked up situations. Mm-hmm. It's continuing this theme of like perhaps the group's luck has run out. You see all these other survivors that had hopes and dreams of trying to get through the other side with their humanity intact, and they're burnt alive, or they're cuddling on a mattress where they've obviously, you know, committed suicide with somebody. And like he's like, you know, like they ask what happened here, and they'll never know. Mm-hmm. And they could be just like someone could be blown through Alexandria. Imagine that. Like you come across Alexandria and it's deserted and there's skeletons around. Like what happened here? Who the fuck knows? Same thing that always happens. It's really instilling that kind of like apocalyptic dread again, where it's like, God, maybe we are going to fucking punch our movie tickets here.
For sure. I don't have much more on that scene. They get back on the road.
Before we move on, there's like, so this is a food mart that's been boarded up, and it's got a bunch of zombies inside. I don't understand why they struck out here, unless all the canned food has just gone bad, because like this seems like a pristine thing. It's not ever been disturbed. It was guarded by people. There's some zombies and maybe some maybe they ate all the food. I don't know.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm thinking. So you see on the rooftop, there's a bunch of people camped out, right, with like mattresses and stuff. Which has to be just the worst in the Georgia summer.
That's what I think. Like, totally exposed. Although they're supposed to be in DC, but still, it's a swamp. Oh, it's not pretty.
Well, then you got cold to deal with, right? You get snow and shit 100%. There. But I was just thinking, like, they must have taken all of the food mart's supplies up to the roof, where like the bottom gets overrun by walkers. They're secure on the roof, but they're stuck there. And so now they're eating through their supplies. They eventually run out and either kill themselves or starve to death. Is like my headcanon for what's going on.
I did wonder what was the kid in like the Letterman jacket chained, like, you know, like Merle chained to the roof. Like, what the fuck did this kid do?
That kid probably got bit in the mad scramble to come up to the roof, and they didn't have the heart to kill him. They, you know.
But why wouldn't he be a zombie? Did they dispatch him once he turned, maybe?
Yeah, that kid was still alive, right? Like, still a zombie.
Oh, you're right. He was.
He's moving around,
wasn't he?
Okay.
Then that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, just headcanon stuff, but who knows? We'll never know. On the road, Gabriel's attacked by a mud walker. It's just a walker in a big mud puddle. Is this a thing walkers do? Why is this walker in this mud puddle?
Why did Gabriel run right through a giant mud puddle? Like, did this mud puddle span the whole county? Like, step around it, man. Step off the road. Right. Walk around it. What the shit? It's big old dumb Gabriel walking into a big old dumb walker bog. Thank God there's only one of them and not like 17, or they'd both be dead.
Right. He falls face first into it. Aaron saves him, but the map is ruined. And then Aaron calls off the search as it starts to storm. They kind of head back, but they find a warehouse and decide to search it. And inside, Aaron finds a wild boar and he kills it. And then they feast on the meat and the booze that Gabriel found. Honestly, I'd rather fight a walker than a wild boar. I don't know about you. Like, Gabriel loses his shit, right? He comes in here and he says, "That scream, man. That scream. I thought you were being eaten alive by walkers. It's just a boar."
Yeah, and everybody joking about that guy worrying about the 30 to 50 feral hogs running through his yard, menacing his wife and kids. But, you know, look at Aaron dealing with just one of them.
What?
That Aaron wished he had an AR-15. You're not on Twitter. God damn it. And half this stuff doesn't land on you.
But wild hogs.
The 30 to 50 feral hogs. You've not seen the 30 to 50. Oh, Jesus.
All this
wasted. Wasted on my co-host.
There's some people out there that enjoyed it. I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our audience is very Twitter savvy. anything else in there? They're feasting on meat and booze. They'll get to the poker playing here in a second. But
do we want to talk about the Dwayne Jones bourbon? There's a couple things I want to talk about, but like you had said that you'd looked into that, and talk about the Dwayne Jones bourbon and its relation to The Walking Dead.
Yeah, let me run down this scene because this is during the poker game stuff, right? So I'll do that, and then I'll talk about this whiskey. So Gabriel teaches Aaron to play, to appreciate whiskey, not to play poker. He probably already knows. But they end up playing poker, and they drink that whole bottle. And Gabriel tells Aaron about his mentor, Reverend George and how he taught him to be a minister while drunk at the funeral of a teenager who died of cancer. I don't know. Basically, he tells him how to be a good preacher just by listening to people and connecting with them one-on-one. And I agree with that. I like that sentiment.
Yeah, it's a good speech to give to Seth Gilliam, too. I thought he did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And really brought the kind of gravitas. I was a little disappointed to hear he was kind of like turned nihilist because like this whole, you know, evil people aren't the exception to the rule. They are the rule. Like, I don't believe that. And I don't see how fucking Gabriel can believe it.
I mean, he's met
all the stuff he's done.
So I feel like he's justified in his beliefs.
Plus, the other thing is, like, this guy just talks a bunch of shit about evil people for being arguably, maybe that's the thing, is he, when especially when he's half in the bag, he thinks of himself as an evil person because of all the shit that he pulled.
Yeah, he might.
Because
he pulled some shit.
Because, like, yeah, it's like when he's talking about his mentor and how, like, oh, you got a minister, it's not about being on the pulpit, it's about being there for the laity and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, I wonder what this guy's opinion on, like, locking doors to your church while you're the flock is being torn apart by zombies outside. I wonder what he'd say about the failure of a minister in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's a good question.
I don't know.
So this whiskey is called Dwayne Johnson or Dwayne
Jones,
Dwayne the Rock Johnson's whiskey, Dwayne Jones whiskey. And if you are not familiar with the name Dwayne Jones, I can understand that, but it's a pretty famous name because it's the name of the actor who was the main protagonist in Night of the Living Dead, that original George Romero zombie movie. Kind of
started
defined the genre. Yep. And so it's an homage to that, is apparently what the deal is with this whiskey. But there was a lot of stuff on the internet that was very speculative about what this whiskey meant. Do you have the details on that?
Just to there's a lot of theories because, again, this scene was one of the things that was put out as pre-season publicity or pre-bonus episode publicity. And people saw Dwayne Jones, and the thing that went crazy about it is, like, that's the canonical name of Morgan's son. Remember in season one, Dwayne, hit Rick on the head with a shovel, and that's how we started our whole thing with Morgan. And he eventually gets bit and dies. It's very, very sad. People were thought, like, I get there because, like, we never saw Dwayne die.
Mm-hmm.
It was something, a story Morgan told, and there's been a theory, I think, for a long time that Dwayne might still be alive. I think we might have addressed it in feedback once or twice over the last decade. But people are like, oh my God, he has not only alive, he's made his way over to Georgie's New World or these Confederate white troop stormtrooper dudes, and he started to distill, and they're starting, like, they're labeling this shit, and it's a whole, like, civilization, and you know, they're building, and no. I do wonder if the Walking Dead showrunners remembered that Morgan had a son named Dwayne and his last name was Jones, probably as Kirkman's homage to the classic as well.
It was, yeah.
And I wonder if they, like, if they even remembered that, because it does seem like a way to get people spun up. But that's a pretty extreme way to take a bottle of whiskey, right?
But, like, yeah, especially with a character that we basically know by the rules of this universe is 100% dead. Like,
unless Morgan lied or was mistaken, you know?
Yeah. I don't know.
So
he is a little psychotic somewhere around the way, but, like, if he was not dead, would totally undermine everything about Morgan's character, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean,
the whole reason
that
he clears is because it's true. Who gives a shit, I guess.
I want to talk about, because Gabriel turned the Bible to 1 Samuel chapter 16.
Mm. Okay.
Which is the part of the Bible. So, like, catch up on Israelite history. Israelites went to Egypt to escape a famine, end up getting enslaved in the canon of the Bible. God set them free. They wandered the deserts. They went to the promised land, set up shop. They were ruled initially over judges appointed by the Lord himself. And the people like, we don't want these judges. We want kings like the other nation. We feel like a second class nation. Like they do. They're always bitching at the Lord. And the Lord's like, Jesus Christ. All right, we'll make you a king. I got King Saul, didn't go well, turned out to be a wicked king. Him and his heir died, so God's like, she got to get another king. Sends Samuel the prophet out to search the land, and he finds David. And the story about David is that he showed up to his father's house and like, all right, line up all your badass sons. We've heard a lot about them. I'm going to go down and I'm going to sort through them, see which one the Lord's wants. And it's like, you're not the Lord's guy. You're not the Lord's guy. You're certainly not the Lord's guy, you fucker. Get out of here. And and Samuel's like, what gives? The king, the next king of Israel is supposed to be here. And he's like, well, I got one other guy, but he's real shrimpy and he's out cleaning the stables and he's probably not going to be king material. Wouldn't you know it? That there is David, he who slew Goliath somehow, you know, his father's like, you know, the guy to kill the literal giant. Let's keep him in the shed. And
sounds
you know,
like dramatic license to me, but OK. Sure.
And then Samuel anointed him. This has got to mean something about the leadership vacuum we've talked about, right? Like the least likely person of Alexandria will become the leader. And I'm like, who is that? Judith?
Lydia?
She's the young. Oh, Lydia. Okay. Of the people that are like plausible age, the
what about the douchebag teenagers? One of them?
No. They're the unworthy sons.
Okay.
That they got passed over for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't know.
Eugene is the least likely.
Eugene has definitely got big David. He's got big David energy.
Okay. So I don't know what that tells us about the future of the past of Walking Dead, but something.
It's something I'm keeping in mind because I do think there is like, you know, Maggie's back, but is she like, I think that's maybe what you're supposed to be thinking. Like Maggie's back. She's a natural leader, but maybe she's not the right one.
She's still got a stick up her ass about a lot of stuff, right? She's looking to hang somebody else whose name starts with a knee.
And I think this is like about unlikely. Like you can't judge like it's a, you know, you can't judge them by their physical stature and their size, you know, very Yoda in the selection of the next king. So I don't know. It's just something I wanted to throw out there and see if we can make something of it as the episodes progress.
What, with an entire season, a whole extended season, 24, 22 episodes. I don't even know how many episodes, 1800 episodes. Can they get Princess like to be the leader of Alexandria, the leader of the community? By the end of this.
Princess is a lot of things. A leader of a community, I don't know. I don't know. Very unlikely. Very unlikely.
Right?
I'd leave her in a shed with her bicycles, but we'll see.
Yeah, you know what struck me during this conversation as they're like drinking whiskey and talking about the flavors in the whiskey? What do you smell? What do you taste? He's talking about maple syrup and vanilla and breakfast as a kid, and I was just thinking, man, these are things that none of these kids who are born in the apocalypse are probably gonna know, or if they do, it's gonna be a very different version of the thing. And it was one of those like Negan sitting down with the nut taps and the airplanes with that other kid. It was one of those moments where I'm like, yeah, only people who were alive before the apocalypse happened would understand these things. And every once in a while, they throw something in like that I like.
Yeah. Although I think it would be easy to make, fairly easy to make maple syrup.
Yeah. Just go tap some trees. Sure.
Yeah. I feel like they were doing that in the settler days. You know, like if I read about it on a Little House on the Prairie, then they probably can do it in the apocalypse. But vanilla is probably hard to come by.
I would
think
so.
That'd be wild. Like that's the most ubiquitous flavor in the Western world. And they just, because doesn't vanilla grow like out in the Far East or something? It like grows in rainforest or shits. I don't know, because like vanilla beans are hella expensive.
But I think you're right. Anyway,
I'd be sad without vanilla.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into season two.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
So yeah, I don't know how much more you want to talk about this, because then Aaron goes out to take a piss. He hasn't returned when Gabriel wakes up, so he's looking for him, but instead he finds Robert Patrick, who wants his boar meat. Apparently this is his place, and he pulls Aaron's mace arm out of a bag, fires a few shots at the room next to them, and says, "Hey, Aaron's in there." And Gabriel tries to preach at the man the man who has all these Bibles, but apparently he's just using them for toilet paper. And then he wheels Aaron out and makes them play a modified game of Russian roulette where they can either point it at themselves or point it at the other person and pull the trigger. And they go a couple rounds. Eventually, Gabriel talks this guy out of making them play this game. And once he does, and the guy's guard is down, he bashes him to death with Aaron's mace arm.
This is true. This is what happens.
Yeah.
What did you think was going to happen when they started setting up this scene?
I mean, I thought, that's a good question. What did I think the outcome of this would be? Because I knew he was going to make them play Russian roulette. Like, as soon as he pulled out this pistol, I was like, okay, that's where it's going, Deer Hunter, like you said. I assumed that they would distract him and then shoot him with the one bullet they had in the gun.
That's exactly what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah, but
like they're going to trade off a couple shots, and then because they kept on building this thing about faith. And I thought Gabriel was just going to, like, you know, not knowing for sure. Although, like, that's the thing about Russian roulette. I always thought it's like, well, if you just look at the cylinder, you can tell whether the bullet, like, mostly like the bullet's either gonna, if it's in it, yeah, it's going to be at the top or bottom. Uh-huh. If you can't see a bullet from the sides, then you got a 50-50 chance of dying.
Right.
But like there's ways around that. Like, cause I think the way they get around that Deer Hunter is the guys spin it and they put it in the guy's hand and put, like, they don't get a chance to, like, look at the gun or examine the gun. But I thought that's what it was going to be. It was going to be a faith thing. Like, you know, him and they'd probably trade a couple shots. And then, like, Gabriel just, like, while, cause they kept on making a thing of Robert Patrick, like, wheeling the gun around the, like, person to person,
yeah,
and monologuing and getting distracted. I thought sure Gabriel's going to whip and just put one right in his O-ring.
Yeah, I would have been pretty disappointed by that ultimately, though. I think it was better the way they did it.
Yes. And I was happy. I was actually like, I can't believe they subverted my expectations. And then I was like, okay, well, the Robert Patrick, that he's going to join the group. This is kind of interesting. But then Gabriel beating him to death, what did you think about that? I'm not sure they got like all the way there with Gabriel for me.
I mean, they're this scene is clearly more to say something about Gabriel than the people around him. Like, he, you know, he's changed and he is completely without faith. He's hopeless and he shouldn't be leading this community. Like, I don't think at this point that you want someone like Gabriel on the council, whatever remains of the fucking council. Yeah, I was kind of horrified by it.
Yeah.
Because I don't think people are irredeemable. And then he apparently at this point does.
I mean, Negan,
right,
is working his way to pillar of the community status. And this guy is like, again, I feel like there are characters that they had done this and it wouldn't have surprised me, like Carol, and others like Carol. But I felt like Gabriel, like they definitely told the story of him being a little bit, you know, lost and his moral compass kind of spinning. But like, they also told the story of right as he was about to give up, when I give up and take a last stand, he was miraculously saved by the intervention of an old friend.
Yeah.
Who met him when he was a pretty despicable person and did some pretty despicable things to the group. I don't know. Like, I don't feel like they got the Gabriel this deranged, or maybe they're saying that Gabriel is this deranged. We need to get on board with it. It clearly horrified Aaron.
Right.
But I felt like this episode did more to develop Aaron's character than it did Gabriel's.
Oh, you think so?
And like, they're dragging Gabriel down to give Aaron a contrast to play off of. I think that's what I felt like anyway.
I thought it did both. I mean, we've seen the slide of Gabriel for a long time, which I guess is why I would say, yeah, it maybe does a little bit more for Aaron, but like, this puts a stamp on it that says this is it, right? Gabriel is the man without faith, the priest without faith at this point. And not just without faith, but he's like completely turned around on redemption and humanity and everything. Like, I don't know what he's living for at this point. Like, if you think that way, why are you still trying? Why are you out looking for food for a community that you apparently think is rotten to its core, to every last member?
But that's the thing. I don't think he does. Like, I think, because like, when the guy accused him of that, he's like, oh, that was, you know, I was drunk. And then he retorted the vino veritas. And I think you're supposed to say like that. Yeah, if I'm trying to synthesize this, like, Gabriel thinks his community is good and there are diamonds in the rough out there. Maybe 1 out of 100, 1 out of 10. But a guy who would kill his own family members for food is in the irredeemable section. You know, guys who totally beat some of your best friends to death with a baseball bat, redeemable. But, you know, in not a survival situation, just as a way to maintain law and order. But guy who in a survival situation, I don't know. I felt like it was pretty shitty of Gabriel.
And I mean, if they're not saying that Gabriel thinks everybody is evil, like, then what?
Then why did they have him say that?
Well, I mean, not even why did they have him say that, but what are they doing with Negan? Why hasn't he killed Negan?
I mean, we still got the Here's Negan episode, so maybe that's going to be like Gabriel decide, like, finally coming back. Like, I've made some decisions since I've been out, and I'm going to try this Carol thing where we just fucking do whatever we want and say it's for the greater good. And
yeah,
Negan's dead. How can you ever say likewise? You know, because whatever happens is going to happen now, for good or ill. I did think the other thing is like, I guess Gabriel never struck me as a good actor, and he was excellent as a character in this. Not like Seth Gilliam, obviously a great actor, but I'm talking about like Gabriel has never been an especially good liar, especially good at subterfuge. And he just completely had this guy hook, line and sinker, like was trying all the tricks, like, you know, why do you wear that collar? Same reason you have all those Bibles. And that was kind of a hilarious scene where Gabriel thought he had something like, oh, we both got respect. And he's like, I use that for toilet paper. Yeah, I like the thin paper. There's plenty. There's tons of Bibles out there in the land.
So it's true.
Worldwide bestseller. But and then like I thought he was going like, man, when he started talking like, you know, all that shit about, you know, you thought your brother gave you a valuable gift. He gave you nothing. You're just trying to make sense of the senselessness. And the truth is you meant less to your brother than a mouthful of food. I thought he was trying to get him riled up to get an angle on him.
Right.
And no. Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, they're doing a lot with, you know, bluffing here because like they're playing poker earlier. True. He bluffs Aaron. Yeah. Robert Patrick says you can't. I'm not as easily bluffed as your friend over there. Right. And then Gabriel does end up bluffing him. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, they're definitely portraying Gabriel as like using the cynical use of his skills as a preacher and the idea that he's supposed to be connecting one on one with these people. That's very much what he's doing in the moment with this guy
right here. Yeah.
But he's doing it to a totally different end, to end this guy's life. It's kind of fucked up when you look at it through that lens. Right. I wonder what Reverend George would have to say about that.
I don't know.
Probably nothing good.
Reverend George makes it a habit of attending young boys' funerals.
Drunk.
Drunk.
Uh-huh.
As a priest. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, let's move on to the second half of this harrowing scene where Aaron wonders where this guy was hiding, that he could hear their whole conversation. So they decide we're going to search upstairs. And they find his stash, which his stash apparently includes his brother who's chained up and the bodies of his family.
And again, it stinks. It stinks real bad up here, apparently. Enough for Gabriel to be like, pew-wee, which he didn't do when he degloved the zombie in a quick mart full of zombies. So no. This is a pretty funk of 50,000 years kind of shit.
He didn't even do it when he walked into the room with the wild dead boar, which has to stink, right?
That's true.
Wild boars can't smell pretty good.
Oh, no. Especially when you get their outsides on the in or the insides on the outside.
Yeah. They unchain one of the, which I got to say, the brother, it's hilarious because I didn't expect them to be twins. So it's Robert Patrick again.
I didn't either. Right. But they wanted you to. Yeah. They're doing something visually there. Yeah.
It works. I mean, it makes it more.
It makes it as soon as you see him, you know exactly what's going on. Whereas if it's somebody sure. else, you'd be like, well, who the hell are you? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. This right. is like, yeah.
Identical but this kind of. Does this justify what Gabriel does? I don't know. So they unchain one of this guy's hands and he grabs Gabriel's gun and uses it to blow himself off, blow himself away. Does
and
this
he also
justify
gestures to his dead? Like there's a dead child and woman on the ground and mm-hmm. He's been chained up having to watch him the whole time. And he says that he made me play. So you understand that he made the family play the Russian roulette game.
And the brother shot his family rather than put the gun to his own head. Is that
yes? Or maybe they all just end up committing like they all shot themselves in the head or like I don't know, because like the thing is like even if your brother tried to steal the last bite. First of all, he said you try to steal the last bite of food. Well, you're in a warehouse surrounded by food. I don't buy it. I don't buy your story. Number two, he said, even if your brother who had a family stole the last bite of food, you know, because he's crazy with hunger, I don't think it justifies making you play a Russian roulette game until his wife and child are dead.
Agree.
So, like, I think this guy's fucking a lunatic. And certainly, if you're going to do all that, to keep your brother alive for God knows how many years to torment him with his failure, and, like, what kind of fucking life did they lead together? I do think that like Gabriel might have been accidentally right that this is the type of guy that you get him home, you get him into a nice house, like this is the kind of guy that might go on a rampage in the middle of the night, who the fuck knows.
Yeah,
but like he didn't know that going into it.
No,
you know, killing your brother over food, like this is kind of some standard, like it's happened to our group, like that have gotten into pointless squabbles and stuff about like this, and it didn't make them bad people. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, fucking Magna stole like a quarter of the group supplies like 7 episodes ago, and she didn't fucking get her brains blown out. So I don't know. It seems like But I don't get it, because like it doesn't matter, because like it's not like Gabriel gets points for being accidentally right about how psychotic this guy was.
No, he certainly doesn't. I still think what he did is scary, but also I guess you have to sort of put this in the context of Dante. Because he sort he was brought into the group.
The Inferno? And they didn't.
No, the doctor.
Okay, yeah, okay, doctor, yeah,
Dr.
Yeah,
Lips
the
horny doctor. I forget what we were calling
him. Yeah.
But yeah, you got to put it in that context too, where he, you know, kills Sadiq because they just brought him in and didn't like really question his background, didn't look at him. It turns out he was a psychotic lunatic who wears the skins of the dead in his spare time and ended up murdering them and kind of dooming them all in a certain kind of way. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's got a point about these crazy people, you know, right? But also, that's a slippery slope. And where does that extend?
Especially when you think of Aaron and Gabriel's character arcs. Like, we meet Gabriel as a man so afraid that he locked a sanctuary place where he arguably could have been stronger with his whole flock in there. And who knows what kind of group that Rick would have met if he had opened his doors. But he is so afraid for himself that he hid behind strong walls and let everyone else die. Aaron, when we're first introduced to him, he is actually questing far and wide to find people to bring back to their safe walls of their community.
Yeah.
So like they're like antithesis and antithetical to like their core of their characters, motivations and roots. So we might even see this because I think that's why Aaron's extra horrified, because he is the guy that goes out and finds new people. And Gabriel's the guy that shuts the door on them. And this could be them kind of reverting to type, because remember, Aaron like was talked into the kind of like real politic of Michelle, where it's like, yeah, you know what? I was wrong to think that we could trust people and wrong thing. We got to be hard asses about this whole thing. Aaron seems like to revert back to his type, and Gabriel now has too. So I think that's kind of interesting from a writerly point of view, too. If they did that deliberately to like pit these two together as kind of like opposites, that's kind of intriguing. And since I imagine they're going to be carrying a lot of the weight of the show going forward, now that we don't got Rick, we don't got Michonne.
Well, Maggie's back too. I'm wondering the tone of the show is going to be interesting in season 11, because you are going to have, I think, the majority of people in this community of Alexandria not wanting to integrate new people. I think Maggie definitely wouldn't, right? I mean, she's going to be screaming Reaper every time somebody comes to the gates.
They're starving. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right. They don't have the food They can't quite afford to bring people in. But also, Gabriel certainly doesn't want to bring new people in. He doesn't trust anybody. But Aaron's going to be, you know, kind of the dissenter, I think. And we might see a much more closed up Alexandria, because you got guys like Ezekiel who would be inclined to say, no, let's bring everybody in. We're stronger together out there. Just on the road, you know, wherever the hell he's going to be, but he's not going to be in Alexandria at the beginning of the season.
He might be dead soon. Like, yeah, that's another thing. Because he's like, I also think in season 11, there's like a lot of people die.
Mm-hmm. But that experience with Dante is going to, I think it's going to scar a lot of people. The Whisperers are like going to leave their mark on this community even after they are gone. And it can't be a good one. It won't be one of open arms.
The one thing I will push about the food shortage I don't quite understand is they have a community called Oceanside that is by the ocean,
and they've done a lot of spear fishing.
I don't see how you ever starve if you live by the ocean, especially in a zombie apocalypse where 99% of the world's population has died.
Just get scurvy. Like,
how? Like, don't you get vitamin C from eating animals? Because like
be true, right? I mean, the sailors are the ones who you always get scurvy, right? They can not just like dip their nets.
They usually get scurvy when they're like at sea and they're eating like maggoty bread, and you know, they've run out of their fresh meat and stuff like that. They're down to like salted pork and which is essentially shoe leather and a biscuit. But
yeah,
I don't know. You don't need a lot, but I thought you get like you get most of the vitamins you need from just eating animal flesh, because the animals need those vitamins and amino acids and proteins. And you know, just some like rabbits, like, I guess you can starve by eating rabbits because they're I don't know. Like, how much vitamin C is in a salmon or a trout or a bass or flounder?
Your joints will be fine.
But yeah,
your brain will be good with all the oils.
But. Yeah. I do wonder, and they got boats too. They got fishing boats. So they could like go out and like net a couple hundred pounds of fish and then like, yeah, maybe get bored eating tuna, but like you will survive, you know, you will survive on crab, tuna, flounder, halibut, whatever.
So maybe we'll see more of Oceanside in season 11 than we did in every other season combined.
Yeah. It's a way to cut cost, you know, like just they're always on the beach. Yeah. Yeah, you got the huts and then you got the beaches and that's the locations.
Why not? So they head back and on the way back, they spot a water tower and decide to swing by to check it for supplies.
Did we actually mention that his brother killed himself like after a brief scuffle with the gun? Because I'm not sure we actually recapped that part.
I did.
We did. OK. All right.
It's brief.
So no, because that's the other thing is like when he got up there, I'm like, we can still get right. Oh, no, no. He just blew his brains out. That's not going to happen.
Right. That's it for the episode.
Yep. And I thought like, you know, like, so what is because the thing is like whatever tension they set up. And I thought they set up a lot in that third act. I felt like they bled it a lot by having like Gabriel and Aaron regard the water tower as the last place. And he's like, what do you think? One more? And Aaron's like, one more. It's like almost like Aaron maybe is horrified, but like maybe that's supposed to show that like he's not that horrified or it was shocking in the moment. But like he's not mad at Gabriel. He's not aghast. He's not going to get back. And like you won't even fucking believe what Gabriel did out here. So like I felt like they set up some tension in these characters, but they immediately resolved it in the last scene.
You're right.
Which is also beautifully shot, by the way. Another lovely cinematic shot of them wading into what I can only assume is 3-foot grass infested with zombies, but
right.
So
you know what struck me when I was watching this? Is it just what they're doing? What are they doing out here? So they're out. They're following scavenging. Maggie's map. They're trying to find food and supplies for the community. But they don't have like backpacks or anything. They're clearly not going to bring this stuff back, right?
Yes, that's but what I was thinking too is like they do have 2 backpacks, but like it's enough to pack.
Yeah, an extra large can of pudding, like a Carl-sized can of pudding in each of those bags.
You could pack about enough you had to eat just for a 2-week trip for these guys, you know. Right. So, yeah. So maybe the idea was they've
got a backpack full of supplies that they just left with. The first spot they go to is just a smorgasbord of supplies, but they can't fit any of it.
No, I mean, there's the concern of like they take 2 weeks of supplies to go look for supplies and they just don't find supplies. So like you'd be better off standing put, not burning the calories. I don't know if there's any consideration of that,
should they have brought a cart with them? Should they have brought like at least a horse with some fucking saddlebags or something? Should they have brought something with them to retrieve the supplies? Certainly. Or are they just on scouting missions? And if they're just on a scouting mission, surely they're not the only ones doing this, right? And they could quickly and efficiently search all of these by making copies of the map, sending out multiple scouting parties.
I don't know. It took an experienced bushcrafter, Daryl, 5+ years to thoroughly investigate a small riverbed for the remains of Red Grime. So I don't know. Maybe it'll take. But I think you're right. Like it seems like, hey, just go out and check out. And if you find like a big find, then we'll go bring the wagons out and we'll get it. But like that's more efficient than sending the wagons everywhere just to look, you know,
for sure. Yeah. Makes sense. I just wonder if there are other scouting parties doing the same with copies of this map.
Probably.
Why wouldn't they?
Probably.
If you're why would you that just send
Aaron
need?
And Gabe? Like, yeah, that's like your community leaders. Like, it's probably an all hands on board. Also, when Gabriel mentioned about having 20 armed and experienced fighters, that's not an exaggeration. That wasn't a bluff.
No.
Like, Alexander has at least that many.
I mean, Oceanside has that many too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do they have bullets left? Like any? Because I thought they did. Like Judith has bullets.
Some.
They're not
very
bereft
few.
Of guns, but yeah, it's not as many as they used to have. I wonder what happened to Eugene's bullet making factory. Did they run out of like firing cat? I forget what they fucking call the thing that actually makes the gun go bang. But
like, I don't know.
The raw materials for making like if you go back to muzzle loading, I don't know how the hell that you'd ever run out. Mm-hmm. Of the basics things that keep on shooting. Yeah, I might have to go back to muskets, but yeah.
they're effective at close range.
Pretty simple. Fill a tube with black powder, shove a ball in it, light it, and the ball's going to go flying. But yeah. I don't know. Arrows and crossbows, that's where it's at.
Oh, yeah. That seems much more effective.
Oh, yeah, for hunting and zombie work. But, like, mm-hmm. for people, it's hard to, you know, if you got, like, that's the thing. It's like, you ever go against a society's got guns and you're still bow and arrow. It's, I mean, I've played the Civilization games where that happens. Once they invented a machine gun, it was all over for the colonies, you know, it seems yeah. like here on planet Earth. So
how about once they invent stormtrooper armor?
That's a great question.
We're going to get that next week, I guess.
Ewoks just had fucking stone axes and shit, and they made quick work of that. So,
yeah,
you know, all Alexander needs is to find a Chewbacca, and they're good to go. Take over Scout Walker, and you're good to go.
That's it, man.
We don't have any feedback because behind the scenes detail, Jim and I recorded these back to back so that I could take a vacation. I'm going to leave today as soon as I get done recording this and leave for Beaver Island, Michigan for a week. But if you would like to send in what I presume is going to be an extra large feedback edition next week, some thoughts in the preseason, the bonus episodes, anything you're excited for in the new season, send that in to watchingdead@baldmove.com. And we'll consider it for the air. Otherwise, it's time for us to go. We'll be back next week with another exciting episode of these prequels. We're getting closer and closer to the Negan one that everyone says is amazing. And we're but 3 weeks away from the premiere of the final season of The Walking Dead, which I'm very excited for.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for more Walking Dead. We'll be back next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.